This is Issues and Ideas here on 90.1 KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Randall White. As the southern half of the state and really a large chunk of the Central Coast, including all of Santa Barbara County and most of San Luis Obispo County and the Salinas Valley, continue to struggle with extreme drought conditions. And technically, that's listed as D4 by the U.S. Drought Monitor, the most serious of levels. We thought it'd be a good idea this spring and summer and possibly into the fall to keep you up to date with where local water storage levels and usage stand. On a regular basis here on Issues and Ideas, we'll speak with those in the know from a variety of different Central Coast water agencies. Today, we welcome Michael Borman with the City of San Luis Obispo's Public Utilities Department. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's start with where the City of San Luis Obispo gets its water, because years ago, during the 90s drought, the city decided it might be a good idea to diversify.
Yeah, definitely. We get the majority of our water from three surface water supplies. So one of our original surface water supply was actually Salinas Reservoir, which is commonly referred to locally as Santa Margarita Lake. So just east of Santa Margarita, the city. And then after that, we brought online Whale Rock Reservoir, which is above Cayucas, kind of between Cayucas and Cambria, right at the edge of Cayucas.
You can see the dam from Highway 1 if you look off to the right, just as you're, passing Cayucas.
Yeah, so it's an earthen dam. So if you don't know the lake is there, it might kind of seem
like
a little bit hidden, looking like a hillside, exactly. But it's pretty incredible when you're actually up on top of the dam looking down. You can look at the water in the reservoir, look at the water in the ocean, and that's a really rare thing to have a reservoir so close to the ocean like
that.
That's really neat.
Is that publicly accessible to get to that area?
Yeah, there's some fishing access there for steelhead and trout in the reservoir, and a little bit of hiking and potential for mountain biking in the future around the reservoir. But
yeah.
No body contact in the lake and no boat access in the lake.
I see. Okay. So Salinas Reservoir, Whale Rock, and...
And then the last one we brought online, I guess semi-recently, was Nacimiento Reservoir, which is in the far north county.
And that's the big one. That's the grand prize, right, when it comes to our water?
Exactly. So Nacimiento Reservoir is about 377,000 acre feet. So to put that in perspective, the capacity of Salinas and Whale Rock combined is about a sixth of that size.
Whoa.
So really large reservoir, and it has a really great watershed. So Rocky Butte is one of the rain stations that we monitor in that area, and they get on average about 40 inches of rain there. So a lot more than we get in other areas of the county.
About double what we would get in the city of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, and a really big watershed. So that lake, it actually fills up a lot more quickly than our other two reservoirs.
I should mention during a good year.
Yeah.
About double.
Yeah.
So when we say an acre foot, it's literally what it says, right? If you were to take 1 acre of land and cover it in a foot of water, that's an acre foot.
Yeah.
What is a typical person use here in California throughout the course of a year?
Yeah, so generally we monitor water in gallons per person per day. I know a couple years ago, pre-drought, the average was around 170, 180 gallons per person per day. To kind of put that in perspective, right now in San Luis Obispo, we're down to about 90 gallons per capita daily. So one thing that's important is that's including all of our use for commercial and for parks and local businesses. It's not just residential use. So when you look at residential use, it actually drops significantly. During the winter months, residential use is down to about 40, 44, 45 gallons per person per day.
And then San Luis Obispo has another water source, and that is, you could call it recycled water, I guess. It's water that has gone through the sewage system, has been treated, and then hits almost drinking standards.
Yeah, and it's actually really kind of an exciting thing for us to be able to talk about, because First Ones on the Central Coast actually provide recycled water. And it's a drought-resistant source, so it's actually exempt from all of our watering regulations right now with days per week and hours per day. And so it's one of those things where it's kind of limited on use. It's not something that a single-family home can have, can't water their lawn in the front yard with the recycled water. But it does provide water to Laguna Lake Golf Course, to Laguna Lake Park, to Damon Garcia Park, which is one of the huge ones in San Luis Obispo for soccer games and rugby. And we're just able to give the community a place to go where things are still green throughout the drought by using recycled water.
And some of the commercial development on Los Sosos Valley Road, including Irish Hills, it has like Costco and stuff like that in it. That the the plants in there, I believe, also get the recycled water, don't they?
Yeah, so we've got Costco, a lot of areas right along Los Osos Valley Road, a couple places on Broad, the new Cesslock building there, which is right next door to Damon Garcia, is also on recycled water. So we also provide it for large multifamily residences and commercial properties. So if you have a big apartment complex or condo complex that has kind of common areas, we can water those with recycled water.
You just have to be careful those pipes don't get mixed up with the other ones, and that's why they're painted purple, right? To really make them stand out.
Yeah, so a lot of times people will refer to it as a purple pipe system, and it's just a designation anytime. You'll see a lot of times the purple signs that say, you know, recycled water, do not drink. We're kind of required to and definitely should label those systems separately because we don't want to cross those in with our potable water supplies.
Historically, has the city not made more recycled water than is being used?
Yeah, so we produce a lot more than is actually used in the community, and what's left over after what we use out in the community, it actually goes into San Luis Creek and kind of supplements the supply of the creek. So kind of an interesting dynamic there throughout the drought. If you were to go down to Avila, you know, you still see water running into the ocean, and a lot of that is from us providing water into San Luis Creek from our recycled water system.
What's the break point between making that water drinkable and using it as we do today as more for landscaping?
Yeah, we've got to make some changes going forward in the future. We're in the middle of, or I guess beginning the process for our water resource recovery facility upgrade project. And towards the end of that project, we should be in a pretty good position to possibly explore direct potable and indirect potable reuse. And that essentially means either directly drinking recycled water, it's got to get filtered out more. But the other option is where we percolate it back down into the ground and pump it back out as it's been filtered through the earth. So, but it is becoming more publicly accessible. I mean, the amount of testing and sampling and work that's gone into development of that source across the nation has been huge. So people are starting to catch on to the idea that it might be a huge future supply for California. And it's kind of exciting. If you think about back in the 90s drought, I don't think we ever would have dreamed that this would be something that's possible. And so in 20 or so years, we've been able to get to a point where we've almost created a new water supply. And so in California, we're not putting a lot of new reservoirs in. And we're definitely not getting a lot of rain right now. So for us to be able to utilize existing water that we have is really important. And the city's been kind of on the forefront of that locally. And we'll continue to do that through the Water Resource Recovery Facility Upgrade Project. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Let's talk about the trees managed by the city. Sadly, trees in California have been really hard hit by this drought, dying by the millions statewide, mainly in the national forests and such. We're not talking about city trees. What is the city doing to protect those that are within its control right now?
Yeah, there's a couple things. We've been hearing a lot from the community about the value of trees, and we're a Tree City USA. The city has made a huge investment in staffing to take care of the local trees, and then and also communicating the value to the public. I mean, if you go downtown and look up as you're walking down one of the main drags, that's one of the really appealing parts of being in San Luis Obispo. Is it just makes it feel like a really nice place when you've got the shade going over the top of you, and it just has a neat feel downtown. But the drought's had a big impact on that, and so it's kind of our responsibility, or at least mine today, to tell people we don't want you, of all the things that you're going to give up, if it's your lawn or maybe making some changes inside, we really don't want people to lose those trees, because they're such a long-term investment that once they're gone, it's not like you can just get them back the next day. You know, it's going to be tens of years, maybe 100 years before we get some of those trees back to the level that they're at right now. So one option for taking care of the trees is using gray water. We've heard from a lot of people who are, you know, capturing shower water and taking that back out and dumping it on the trees. And it's kind of funny. At the San Luis Obispo home show last year, I talked to a lady that was probably in her mid-80s, and she was telling me, you know, I gather that water and I carry it outside and I dump it. And I was just thinking about that logically of how much of an effort she's putting into keeping the trees alive in front of her house, and it's really kind of about that personal sacrifice, and for the city, I mean, we've seen it across the board. People have really gone above and beyond what we would ever expect. But there's a couple other things that people can do to really make sure that the water that they use on their trees is used most efficiently. We're obviously in a situation where we're in a bad drought and we're not getting a lot of rain, so we want to make sure that what we do use is efficiently used. So the one of the really big ones is putting mulch over the top of that area around the roots, and that just keeps the sun from beating down on them and absorbing or basically causing all that water to evaporate rather than absorb into the
ground.
So
like some sort of bark, shredded or in chunks, that sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Bark. Some people will put a little bit of like gravel over the top, and it just provides a little protective layer and make sure that that water is able to percolate down and actually feed the roots. One of the other things that's really important is that soil where the root system is actually soft enough to absorb water. So if you went out and dumped a bucket of water off on the base of a tree, a lot of times it'll just roll right off because right now it's just been so dry that soil's really been compacted. So if you can loosen that up, take a screwdriver to it, and just provide a little bit of an area for that water to percolate in, that's really important. And then also a slow drip onto the trees. So if we have spray irrigation spraying trees, it's likely a lot of it is going to just pour off. So there's a couple different things you can do. If you have drip irrigation, just a slow drip from your irrigation system onto the root system of the trees. The other thing that's kind of unique is you could take like a 5-gallon bucket, poke a hole in the bottom of it, and fill it up, and it'll slowly leak out throughout the day and just allow slow percolation into the root system of the trees.
And then be careful the next time you fill it up.
Yeah, remember right. What you use the bucket for.
So I was at a homeowners association meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the topic of watering days came up, and there was widespread confusion throughout the group. And these are all people that really want to do the right thing. How successful has the city been at getting the word out as to which days you're allowed to water in relation to your address?
Yeah, so that's one of the main challenges. Is where we're getting a lot of our savings right now is from reductions in outdoor irrigation. So at the beginning of 2015, we went to a 3-day-a-week watering, and it was pretty basic. It was if you were on the odd side of the road, it was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you're on the even side of the road, it was going to be Tuesday, Thursday, and I believe it was Saturday. Then in July, we went to 2-day-a-week watering. And I think during that transition, some people didn't get the word and kept with the 3-day-a-week watering. When we went down to 2-day-a-week watering, for odd-numbered addresses, it's going to be Monday and Thursday. And for even-numbered addresses, it's going to be Tuesday and Friday. So no watering for anyone on Wednesday, no watering on Saturday and Sunday.
Was that a conscious effort? Because those are the days most people want to water on a Saturday and Sunday.
It's one of those things where we also have to balance our ability to enforce that and monitor it. So when we have staffing available during the week, it's easier for us to get out there and see if people are out of compliance. So most of the city is great about it. And when we do find people that are watering on the wrong day, generally our first method for getting in touch with them is we either knock on the door and just have a conversation, or we leave them a door tag just stating, hey, just so you know, you're watering during prohibited hours or on a prohibited day. Please double check your irrigation system and make sure that you get the timers right. So we're really lucky. I mean, we're in a community where I can feel really comfortable sending my staff out to have some of those difficult conversations. And the community is generally really pleasant about those things. So,
what about hours on those days? Is there a window, even if it's a day you can water, are there hours during those days you're not allowed to?
Yeah. We want to make sure that you're not watering from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. So basically during the middle of the day when the sun's out and it's hot and a lot of that water is going to evaporate. We don't want you watering during those hours. So from midnight to 7 a.m., you can water. Then there's that gap from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. where you can't. Then
is this just for automatic systems?
Yeah.
This does not include hand watering.
Correct. So you can hand water anytime. This is for controlled irrigation. So outdoor irrigation systems, drip irrigation, spray irrigation. It's for controlled timers, really.
Okay.
So it gives people some options for on the weekends. We also have a lot of people locally who have weekend homes here, maybe work in the Bay Area or in L.A., and come up and spend their weekends here. At least it gives them a little bit of leeway to make sure that they can still, focus some attention on areas that may need attention.
Even with the confusion over which days, which hours, all that sort of stuff, how are we doing? Are we meeting the governor's mandate, and are we meeting community standards here in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, so as far as the community is doing, we've far exceeded our 12% goal for the year, and it's been one of those things where we kind of had an idea beforehand based on previous experience in the community that we might, but I think the community just over, you know, they went way above and beyond what we ever had imagined they'd be able to do.
And the reason why San Luis Obispo is at a 12% goal and not at the 20 or 25% goal, I forget what it is now, that the governor had mentioned, is because each community was judged differently based on how well they were already conserving, right, before the mandate was created.
Correct. So because our gallon per capita daily usage was already pretty low, we kind of had a reduction goal in comparison to some areas in California. So the state kind of took into account that we might not have as much water that we can actually reduce using right now. So that discretionary water use might not be as high here as it may be in other communities. So 12% was our goal. We've sat closer to 20% on average. Pretty impressive, especially considering the vast majority of our savings came from voluntary conservation. You know, we limited the number of days and hours that people can water outdoors, but we haven't told people that they need to reduce significantly inside. Yet we've been hearing conversations or talking with people a lot who have been saying, you know, I'm collecting my water inside and from my sink and using it to flush my toilet, or I'm using it to put on my plants outside. And so it's a really encouraging thing, and something that I think a lot of times we don't get to say thank you for. For me, working in that department, having those conversations with the community when things, both when they're doing well and when they're not doing well, it's always important for us to say, like, this is you guys. You guys are the ones making the sacrifices to make this happen. We're going to get out there and try to work with the community on solutions to problems that may pop up, whether it's broken sprinkler heads or poorly designed irrigation or watering on the wrong day. We'll try to come up with solutions, but I mean, the heart of the savings is from people out in the community making sacrifices and starting to think about how they use their water. So it's a really cool thing to see. And like I said, something that we don't get to say thank you enough for. So I mean, if anybody's out there listening, it is awesome. And it's great for me as an employee to know that it's a positive relationship that we have with the community where my employees are never fearful going out and talking to somebody if they're not in compliance. It's just something that I think is really rare, and we're appreciative of it.
Just to hammer the point, San Luis Obispo is not out of the drought. Despite, you know, more rain than we've seen in recent years, it might have seemed like a lot of rain to us just because we had such extreme dry years preceding it. San Luis Obispo is still in a crunch situation, is it not?
Yeah, we didn't get what we were hoping for with El Nino. A lot of the state did. It was actually really good for a lot of the state because of how the state conveys water and moves it around. A lot of it does come from Northern California. So good for the state. Us locally, like I had mentioned earlier, we're predominantly supplied by three surface water sources that are here locally. So when we don't get the rain locally, it obviously impacts our supplies.
Because San Luis is not on the state water system.
We are not on the state water system. The city of San Luis Obispo is not. So there's a couple other local communities that are. But for us, we had some good rainfall this year, closer to about average. And it did fill up Nacimiento significantly, which is very helpful. But we're looking going into 2016, still being in a pretty similar situation to where we really were in 2015. So still looking for people to be responsible with their water use, to pay attention to how they're using it. And there's not a doubt in my mind that the community will continue to meet our expectations, exceed our expectations, and it's really impressive, honestly.
They might have to for several years to come. The long-range outlook is La Nina coming up, which historically has meant drier than normal years for us here on the Central Coast. So fingers crossed that's not the scenario, but that's what the scientists are saying at this point. Well, I got to thank you, Michael Borman, with the City of San Luis Obispo's Public Utilities Department, for giving us an update on where we stand and how we're doing. Sounds like a pretty good job thus far, at least for City of San Luis Obispo residents. And as we continue this series through the summer and into the fall, we'll take a look at communities and have Michael back as well to give us other updates. And you belong to a group of water or utility managers sort of thing, where you get to hear from people throughout the Central Coast, right, and how they're doing?
Yeah, we're a member of the Partners in Water Conservation, which is a group of local cities, and we meet and talk about some of our goals individually as cities, what we can do to improve water efficiency, and kind of bounce ideas off of each other, work together on some larger projects locally that maybe we might not be able to do by ourselves. So we're hoping to get other members in so they can talk maybe about whether it's Atascadero or Paso Robles or Arroyo Grande, some of the situations that those different communities face. Because today, us having this conversation, it's more catered to the city of San Luis Obispo. But it's a little bit different everywhere you go. People in the community could get their water from vastly different supplies and might have different regulations and different limitations on use locally. So it's important for us that people living in these different communities have the relevant information to their community.
Yeah, and certainly we'll spread it out. Michael Borman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
And this is Issues and Ideas here on 90.1 KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Randall White.